Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is 10 minutes after 12. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on a sunny Monday afternoon, and the Cubs heading to the World Series. That nothing could be. Well, the only thing that could make it better was. Oh, and here they are. The Inno boys are in the studio for the business lunch.
That was
we're
sweet.
Honored.
Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are here. Welcome to you both. Dahlke has a Cubs hat on, which is interesting for a guy from North Carolina.
I'm all in.
Win in Rome.
Yeah, well, no baseball team in North Carolina, so I'm a free agent fan and happy to join the Cubs.
Will's not wearing a cap, but it turns out there's not much of a baseball team right now in Boston either.
Oh, well, you know, Theo, we love lending Theo to Chicago. Actually, obviously, Lester and Ross. I mean, there's a lot of Red Sox DNA in the Cubs, so I'm all in on the Cubs.
Boston,
everyone is.
Boston has begat the World Series, right, because you've got Francona as well. In
yeah,
Cleveland.
It is the World Series combination of the people who the Red Sox thought that they couldn't use anymore. Whoops.
Well, one of the things, and we've talked about it on the show before, is that I love about the Cubs is just the atmosphere that Joe Maddon has created. The leadership there, you know, seems to be pretty remarkable. So they fit here for that. But they also fit here because they are a team that really has taken care of and looked at analytics, right? They've got quite a team that looks into that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, the Cubs have really taken a tech-focused approach to getting to the World Series. When Theo came here, he's got a team now of eight data scientists that are on a data analytics team looking at all kinds of things to help the Cubs win. One is positioning players in the field when it comes to the specific batter versus a specific pitcher. So, I mean, managers have been doing this forever based on a kind of an eye test, but they're really taking a data-focused approach and positioning players specifically. And really, you saw that in the game the other night with Adrian Gonzalez hit two balls right up the middle, and Addison Russell sort of positioned right there behind the bag to make those plays.
And what's cool is an article in the New Yorker really shined a spotlight on this data analytic approach from David Axelrod, who made an interesting connection where he combined this Cubs team to the 2008 Obama campaign, where that was the campaign that took a very storied tech approach and was one of the first campaigns to really bring data analytics to that process. So his point was, you know, he saw real similarities between these two kind of these upstart campaigns, one a team, one a presidential race, that just in old school industries and taking that kind of data focused approach. And, you know, we know how 2008 turned out, and we'll see what happens now.
Okay, with any luck, this will be the stupidest question I ask today. But, it occurs to me that there, more than ever, are shifts in the infield when it comes to, you know, batters and pitching matchups. I mean, more than ever. When I was much younger, there might have been one or two players, maybe, in a season that you'd put a shift on. And now it's pretty routine. I wonder if that has to do with different data and the way the data is collected.
I would say yes. I mean, I think if you're really taking a strong look at these data trends, when you're really invested in and looking at it, I mean, you probably can't ignore some of the obvious signs. I mean, if a player hits a ball to this part of the field 88% of the time, you're going to obviously shift your infield that way.
And it's the sort of thing Don Zimmer might have had a notion about, but he didn't have the bits and bytes.
The reason you have these teams is a lot of the things that you end up executing once analyzing the data is stuff, like you said, Jim, you've been doing for years, but now you have that proof, right? The old adage like, oh, three balls, you just sit on the pitch. It's like,
never.
Does that work?
Never.
Is that a good idea? And now you can calculate all of this and see if it works.
Okay, so do the Cubs stand head and shoulders above the rest of baseball, or I would imagine they're just part of a trend?
It is an emerging trend. I mean, we know that this kind of, a lot of it started with Oakland, and then Theo did a lot of it in Boston, and other teams are doing it. So the Cubs are by no means the only team kind of taking a data-focused approach, but as you'd imagine, some managers and teams are more friendly and more willing to use that data than others.
And wasn't there a scandal, was it this season or maybe last, when a former Astro employee was stealing for the Cardinals? Remember that data?
I know that there was like sign stealing going on.
They were actually pulling scouting reports from the company's domain. as an industry gets more tech focused, you're just going to introduce hacking into the equation.
It's the Julian Assange of the MLB. Yeah. Okay, let's talk about Upturnative, because that's a company Chicago based, right? They're Chicago based,
right?
And I just love their story because I just think they so clearly kind of, I don't know if personifies the correct word, but resemble or reflect the idea of this disruptive technology and how it's fought by the powers that be and the struggle they have to deal with. So Opternative is this... Well, explain Opternative for me.
Opternative does online eye exams. So think about you need a glasses prescription, you need a contacts prescription. Rather than going into the optometrist, you can take a test with using your laptop and your cell phone, and you can get a prescription emailed to you, which you can then take in and get filled.
So and just, you've got to take it to a doctor to get it filled.
Right, you can take it to the doctor and get it filled. And so basically what it eliminates is that trip every year to the optometrist to renew your lens prescription.
And the optometrists don't like it.
They do not. Not like it, and they have lobbied hard in certain states to kind of get this technology banned, and Opternative was banned earlier this year in South Carolina.
One of their points, the optometrist, and it's a good one, is that, you know, you're not just checking a prescription. You might, if you're before a doctor, you know, some things that might be sort of warning signs that a doctor would see, you know, would come across.
Certainly, yeah. You know, there are eye cancers and other things that can be checked in a comprehensive exam. Opternative, on its behalf, says that its technology is not a substitute for a comprehensive eye exam. It still encourages people every few years to go get a comprehensive exam. This is just a more convenient way to get your prescription filled.
So here we go to South Carolina, which I think is one of three states that bans it. The legislature passed the ban at the behest of the optometrist down there. The governor, Nikki Haley, Republican, vetoed it. And I had the notes. And the veto was overridden, get this, in the Senate by a 39-3 vote and in the House by a 98-1. So I'm thinking, you know, that has to, well, I mean, there's influence there.
Yeah, overwhelmingly was the veto is overridden.
And so now Opternative has decided to go to court.
They are suing the state of South Carolina. So that's the news last week announced on Thursday that Opternative is going to take this to court. And so we will let the courts decide, you know, if Opternative's technology will be allowed in the state. It's a very interesting case because Opternative is certainly fighting this battle state by state, much like the Ubers and the Airbnbs and other sort of disruptive technology is.
Yeah, I mean, I think you tend to side on the side of the disruptive. Right. That's kind of more of the fun story. Right. We support Uber in the fight against taxis because it makes your life more convenient and more affordable. For Opternative, this is a no-brainer. For me, I have contacts. I have to go get an eye exam every year because the law says if you are going to upgrade your contacts, if you're going to renew your contacts, you need to check.
You have to get an exam.
Every year. My eyes haven't changed in 10 years. Why do I have to pay $100+ to get confirmation that, hey, my eyes are the same? They're terrible. Basically, what Opternative does is it provides me a way to get my eyes checked affordably, and it's a real solution that's helping me. So it drives me nuts that simply because there is a more powerful, influential industry that's been operating longer, they can kind of bully their way into getting something that makes my life easier, harder to access.
Okay, this suit is in state court, right? I think, but they're arguing constitutional rights.
Correct.
What if they lose?
Then they're not going to be in South Carolina any longer.
Well, but I wonder if it will spread elsewhere. I mean, if they lose that.
Yeah, certainly there could be potential ramifications to other states that would look to this law if they were being lobbied against the technology as well. So we'll see. It'll certainly be interesting to see how this plays out across the country.
Kim Dahlke, Will Flanagan are here from Chicago Inn. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, they're going to explain how you can get a free drink. It's 12:22. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Scott Kleinberg will be here right after a check of the news, the headlines coming up a little bit. And I was telling Bill and Wendy, there's right now, I don't know if you guys are up to speed on this, but there's a guy who's being sought, and I think it's Oklahoma, for shooting two police officers there. He's on the run, and he's live Facebooking, or Facebook living, I'm not sure what the verb is, as he's being chased. And it's going on right now that he's posting these things, which is a sort of it's just a remarkable thing where we are with social media right now.
Yeah, it's crazy when stories like this come up that's the mission of social media, to connect us to people and those around us, which sounds great until the thing you're being connected to is the horrors of life. And the scary stuff, and sometimes you want to say, you know what, I'll pass on that connection.
Show me a kitten, will you, please?
Yeah.
We'll kick that around with Kleinberg coming up. But right now, well, let's have a drink.
Let's do it.
This new business, a startup called ClassPass, which, well, it just makes me smile. You know, happy hours were standard here until, I don't know, 25 years ago. Then they were declared illegal. There was a law to sort of, you know, the idea was that people were pounding drinks to meet the happy hour. Happy hours are back. And now this guy's got this class pass. Who's going to explain this?
So the startup is called Bar Pass, and it's taking a class pass model. So class pass, if you're familiar with this company, is sort of like a gym membership that gets you inside any gym, like lots of gyms.
It's a really, really popular startup based out of New York. So if you think about all these, there are now so many micro niche studios and gyms throughout a city that are doing a kickboxing class, a dancing class, work on your core, work on your head, work on your toes. And what ClassPass does is it basically, instead of having to get 1,000 memberships, you pay a monthly membership and it connects you to those studio classes. So you basically have a pass to every class. And this is taking a similar approach to bars. There are so many wonderful bars in the city that do specialty cocktails and drinks, and this basically gives you kind of a membership to these bars.
So you sign up and there'll be a bar of the day or something like that?
So basically what they're doing now, kind of in the early stages, is doing events weekly, about 5 or 6 a month or so. And basically what you do is you sign up with Bar Pass, you get a membership, and it offers you, at the event of the week, you get 1 hour of sort of open bar, and then you get about 3 hours at that bar of sort of exclusive specials that are only given to the Bar Pass members.
And you can bring friends.
Right. So that's their model that's a little different. There's another app called Hooch in New York City, which is kind of like a ClassPass model, but it's like basically giving you one drink a day for free for $10 a month.
Right.
So this is a little bit different. This is kind of more aimed at like the networking crowd, bringing your clients who are coming into town to a bar. They can sort of drink on your tab basically for free. So this is really sort of aimed at that after work crowd, doing a little bit of networking, a little bit of snoozing with clients.
And right now there's no charge, right? They're going to figure out how to charge a little bit later.
Right. So right now they're just trying to onboard users. They've got about there's going to be like a $25 fee roughly.
And that's one of my favorite things about tech, right? Like, there used to be a finite amount of business models. You know, you were ad-based or you were commerce or you sold whatever it was. And now it's like all of a sudden, now ClassPass for X is like another business model. There's the Uber for X, the Airbnb, the Trunk Club. It's like anytime a startup emerges, it doesn't just do well itself. It creates this mini ecosystem of clones that are like, oh, we're going to be you, but for this category,
right,
you for that industry. It's like every time there's this unicorn startup, it has birthed a new business model.
So a couple of hours at the Bar Pass, and then you can see double with Alternative.
That's it. All fits exactly. Yeah, that's a good partnership.
So you talked about the model. How does this work? Are the bars giving away their booze in order to get the crowd in there? Or where's the money going here?
So they'll also get some sponsorships from the bars. So the bars will often want to sort of push a certain brand of liquor, right? So they'll partner with Bar Pass to kind of get their branded booze in front of more people.
And Bar Pass makes the money eventually by selling their membership.
Yeah, I mean, so that's where, you know, it is a scalable model if they can get the users, where it's a membership fee. So they're not relying on, oh, you're a bunch of free users and then we'll find a way to market to
right.
you. They're going to make their revenue through their fee.
Oh, which of you has tried it?
I haven't tried it yet, but what is really fascinating, though, about this company is that it would not have existed had Chicago or Illinois not changed its laws around happy hours. Just in general, you couldn't give discounted booze.
So it's kind of funny. You teased about the Alternative connection, but they are very similar in how, you know, when you're moving so fast as a startup, you are beholden to regulation, and regulation can change, you know, so quickly. And next thing you know, one new legislature and wow, I have a startup, and one new one says,
it's gone.
Wow, it's ruined.
That's Will Flanagan, the managing director of Chicago Inno. Jim Dahlke in the studio as well. Always great to see you guys. We'll be back next Monday when the Cubs will be World Series champions.
That's it. Fly those Will flags.
How about that? The Will, those are W for the win.
They're
not Will flags. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Monday afternoon in the Allstate Showcase studio. Scott Kleinberg is on a phone line with us now. Scott, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
Scott talks with us about social media, and you know, over the months or years or whatever we've been talking, we've been moving toward, and we're going to talk a lot about video and Periscope and live sort of tweeting and all of that. We've got a situation going on right now in Oklahoma where a guy who's wanted for killing two people and shooting two police officers, I think in Lincoln County, Oklahoma, is on the run, and he's using Facebook Live to sort of convey messages. Are you up to speed on this?
Yeah, I've been watching this. This is really crazy.
I mean, it's what we've been talking about, right? But it's a chilling sort of situation.
Yeah, he's using Facebook Live as though he's just so comfortable using it. He's just like, yeah, watch what happens next, and here's everything happening. And there's one story that says that he panned out at one point while he was driving, and he showed a gun on the passenger seat, and he said, if you want to know what happens next, stay tuned to your local news, because apparently they're going to be showing this. And, yeah, it's like the next wave of how we're going to be able to follow this.
Well, it's just all kinds of upside down and bizarre. And I got to tell you, Scott, I was watching his posts, and my first thought was, well, I'm not going to put this guy on the air and play it, because it just, why contribute to it?
Right.
But on the other hand, it is where we are, and it is what we talk about, and so I changed my mind. Here's a little bit of this Michael Vance.
This is more intense than what I thought it was going to be, to say the least. Come on. This truck is about dead. I need it to get out of the road, which I hope it does, because I'm about to steal another car. Like, right now, it's going to be intense.
So that's Michael Vance on Facebook, posting live, Facebooking live. I'm not sure the right verbiage there. But, and you're right, what you said. He's just so at ease with it. It's just sort of a natural extension of what he does.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he sounds so calm there, and like, you know, he's ready for whatever happens next. But yeah, the whole panning of the phone and the whole way he's doing it. Yeah, it's an amazing thing to watch. People are talking about it all over the internet, on Twitter, on Facebook, and you know, hopefully everything turns out.
It turns out with him in handcuffs without him hurting anyone else. That's how it turns out.
Exactly.
But you know, before this campaign started 15 years ago, everyone talked about how this was going to be the campaign of Periscope and all of that. I haven't really seen that develop. Have you?
No, not nearly as much. I mean, you know, just live video in general has just gone absolutely crazy.
Right. And so a couple of things I want to talk about today. Instagram is moving toward video. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, they've had video for a while. I mean, you've been able to for a while to work on Instagram, but now they are actually testing live video, or it's believed they're testing live video. So it would almost be a compliment in a way to Facebook Live, because Facebook and Instagram are owned by the same company.
Right.
But in this case, you know, it'll be super interesting, because like we just saw with the last story, you know, people find different ways to use these different platforms depending on what you're doing. So Facebook Live seems to be more towards the news side of things. I can see Instagram Live, I think they're calling it Insta Live or something like that. I can see how that could be just much more, you know, just normal everyday photo type of thing. And then each platform will have something special to go to. And it's just amazing. Every day there's a new platform that has to compete in this space.
And they seem to all be competing in the same way by offering some sort of live video.
Yeah, exactly. But Snapchat is totally changing that. They probably have said, okay, well, everybody's doing live video, how can we do it differently? And you remember we talked not too long ago about those glasses that they are developing. So they're talking about live video basically being hosted on your face, and everything you look at is what you see. So everybody's finding this creative way to fit into this space.
So last night I'm sitting on my chair in front of the TV.
Okay.
Football I care about. The baseball is on a bit of a hiatus until tomorrow. I'm trying to find something to watch. I'm like, well, I'll watch a TV show. And it didn't even occur to me to turn on and to go to, you know, my cable offerings. I went first to Netflix, and then I went to Amazon. It's the way we watch TV. And soon I'll be able to go to Snapchat to pick a TV show.
Yeah, Snapchat is actually looking into original programming and original video programming. They say anything from breaking news to entertainment to reality shows. The thing that I found amazing about this is that they're specifically looking for shows in the 6 to 8 minute range.
Right. That's character development.
But what has happened to our attention span? You know, the 6 to 8 minute TV show is going to become the thing of the future.
How will that be?
That's incredible.
What do you suppose that would be like? I mean, obviously, it's not going to be Well, I don't know what it would be, a 6 to 8 minute TV show.
You know what I think it's going to be like? I think it's like when you're on Facebook and someone posts that video that you have to watch and you go to it, you know, it's 8 or 10 minutes long or whatever. Right. I think that this is going to be something where there are going to be episodes, I would assume, and a 6 to 8 minute episode, you know, you watch it, you come back the next day, the next week, or maybe it's something you binge watch and you can watch it all at once. I mean, I still like the half hour TV show. I still like the hour long TV show. I'm not sure how I feel about something ending that quickly. It'd be so emotional.
Although, you know, something like Zach Galifianakis's Between Two Ferns, that would work perfectly. That's about the length there.
Exactly, exactly.
Let's talk about Facebook. And I guess there was a mini, yeah. I'm not sure I get this, a mini revolt at Facebook because of some of Donald Trump's posts, and some Facebook employees thought it was hate speech or something like that. It gets all the way to Zuckerberg.
Yeah, Facebook employees were basically saying that they didn't understand why Donald Trump was getting a pass and being able to talk about, you know, building a wall and keeping people out of the country and that kind of stuff. These are the people that are actually in charge of deciding whether a post stays up or comes down when you report it. So this is a whole group that has to basically say, okay, this does violate our terms, this doesn't violate our terms. And these are the people saying, well, why are we giving Donald Trump an exception? So Mark Zuckerberg, what did go to him, he's basically saying, well, we can't drown out one candidate because they're saying this. So in turn, they're actually going to update. They don't say whether or not it's because of this, but it has to be connected. They're going to update their entire policy.
But do you know what specifically he might have posted that would be in violation of their policy?
Well, see, that's just the thing. I don't think he posted anything that was truly in violation. And it's not just what he's posting. It's what people are sharing from him. It's literally the stuff he's talking about keeping people who are Muslim out of the country and that kind of stuff. They're trying to extend it and say that this is in violation. It's not necessarily what he posted that was so particularly shocking. It was just those posts when people said, this to me is hate speech. These were the people who had to say, yes, it is. No, it's not. And they're basically having a hard time defending it and saying, you know, really, it is a form of hate speech. So he's trying to say, one, it's a presidential candidate, we can't do that. And number two, we're going to change our entire policy. So things that are newsworthy, even if they seem to violate our terms, we're going to let them go through in the greater good for news.
Yeah, if they want to find hate speech, just find the responses that I get on my page, whether I post something for Donald Trump or for Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's just amazing.
And that is so true that you bring that up, because it's the double standard. It's everything that comes up in comments where people report those comments, and those comments never come down. Those are always found to be within the scope of what they're allowing. And you're right. Those, in a lot of times, are much worse.
Scott Kleinberg, it is always great to talk to you. I appreciate it very much, and I hope to talk to you one day down the road as well.
I look forward to it, Steve. Thanks,
all right, buddy. I appreciate it. It's Scott Kleinberg talking about social media. We'll take a break. We'll talk about student protests. Free tuition around the corner? Maybe. Maybe not. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. All right, if you paid attention to the Democratic race for the presidential nomination, you know a lot of it was about the cost of tuition, whether or not there should be free tuition programs like that. Hillary Clinton is running on that a bit. In Illinois, there's trouble with funding for the MAP grants that would go to low-income students who need a leg up to go to school. That was taken away for a while and restored. But today there will be a march in Chicago for the Chicago Student Action Group. It's a Moral Monday event. And we got a couple of the organizers in the studio with us. Alex Ding and Esau Chavez are in the studio. Alex and Esau, welcome both of you to the Business Lunch.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. All right, let's start. Esau, you tell me, what's this all about today?
Well, we're here today because we really want to change the narrative about public education in the state of Illinois. We really want to make sure that people know that free higher education is a possibility, and that we need to be fighting for progressive reform in order to create the revenue to make that possible.
And the release I read somewhere said it's a human right, that higher education is a human right. And when I read that, I'm like, okay, you guys, you know, okay, I get it. But then when you do think of it, I mean, we do have free or taxpayer-funded education, K-12. We're at a place now where people need a college degree, by and large, to get a career. So maybe it is time we address that.
Yeah, exactly. And I would just echo exactly what you've said, is that, you know, we have a lot of principles to what we do. And I think one of them, first and foremost, is that we do believe that education is a human right. And it shouldn't be a privilege for just the rich and wealthy, but everyone should have access to it.
I told you two when you walked in the studio, you look way too well-dressed and well-groomed to be rabble-rousers. Well, who are you guys? Where are you from? Are you college students?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Alex, and I'm a leader with Chicago Student Action, and I'm currently a third year at the University of Chicago.
Esau?
Yeah, my name is Esau Chavez. I'm the organizer of Chicago Student Action, of course, but I was taking classes at Illinois Institute of Technology before I decided to take a couple of semesters off because of the MAP grants and high cost of loans made me want to take some semesters off.
You were impacted by the cutoff there of the MAP grants.
That's right. And before that, I was at community college in Daly College. And it's just so severely underfunded, some of these colleges. They lack programs, they lack sports. Unfortunately, it really looks like a high school, some of these. And we really need to be putting our money in places that will make a difference.
Okay, I'm kidding you about your appearance and all that, but you want to go out and cause trouble this afternoon, right? What's going to happen?
We're really not trying to cause trouble. We are trying to promote this idea of a free public higher education. And really, people don't really know that this is a possibility given the revenue options we have on the table.
Now tell me, how would it work?
The specific way that we could make it work is we could either close corporate tax loopholes, which in Illinois, 2/3 of corporations pay no income taxes. So that would bring in the $2.5 billion necessary. However, we could also do the progressive income tax for Illinois, which would bring in $9 billion, or we could do a LaSalle Street tax, which would bring in somewhere around $11 billion.
So, Alex, do you have anyone's ear in state government? I mean, it's one thing to protest and be heard.
Absolutely.
Do you have the ear of anyone in power who might be willing to hear you out?
Absolutely, yeah. So we're part of a coalition of groups here. So Fair Economy Illinois is sort of the umbrella organization, but working largely with progressive state rep Will Gazzardi, who's also championing a lot of these bills. But I would just add
something. Course he is.
Yeah, right. but I would just add something that Esau said, which is that I think a big part of our goal for today really is to get the ear of a man named Ken Griffin. I don't know if y'all have known too much about him, but he's one of Governor Rahner's top donors. I mean, he's donated at least $12 million to his campaign. And Governor Rahner is really the man that's sort of spearheading a lot of these cuts we're seeing. I mean, he's proposing 31% cut to higher ed here in Illinois, and that's just not something we're okay with.
Okay, Alex, you keep bringing up Griffin's name, though, but what do you want him to do?
Yeah, so, I mean, we know that he's a powerful man. You know, we know that Governor Rahner listens to a man like Ken Griffin as his top donor, one of his top donors, and he's the wealthiest man here in Illinois. And so we're really, really hoping to sort of leverage his influence and push him to make the changes we need to see in our state.
Let's talk a little bit about the structure of the protest. We're about out of time, but you expect people to be arrested at this afternoon. And I just wonder, as the guy who watches it, do you know in advance who's going to, are there designated arrestees, Esau?
Right, yes. So it's a voluntary basis. There's just a lot of strong feelings about this. A lot of people are really, you know, upset with the fact that education funding has been slashed and the cost of colleges have gone up. And it just has created the situation where so many people have had to work such long hours, and with wages being just not impactful as they used to be. We really need to do something. And this is just how passionate people are about it right now.
Alex Ding and Esau Chavez, both of you, it's great to talk to you. And thanks very much for coming in the studio. Good luck this afternoon.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Make sure you've got bail money in your pocket.
Yeah.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.